From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A week after President Donald Trump unveiled his plan to lower drug prices, calling it, quote, the most sweeping action in history, a physician has published his own plan to control the skyrocketing prices of prescription drugs. Dr. Adam Gaffney, on behalf of the U.S.-Canadian Pharmaceutical Working Group, published a paper in the British Medical Journal outlining a multi-part plan to control drug costs in both the U.S. and Canada. Dr. Adam Gaffney is an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School, Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine at the Cambridge Health Alliance. Welcome to the program, Dr. Gaffney.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, let's talk about what it was that Trump proposed. During his campaign, he claimed that this was a very important issue to him. And he specifically said that he would be interested in using, in Medicare, using its purchasing power to essentially drive down drug prices from pharmaceutical companies. The announcement that he made just about a week ago essentially ignored that key point, right?
It absolutely did. Trump talked a big talk on the campaign trail about bringing the pharmaceutical industry to task. At one point he said that pharmaceutical companies were getting away with murder, and so on and so forth. And specifically, he has previously endorsed, as you said, direct negotiations by Medicare with the drug companies, which we know could save billions. But as you said, this plan walks away from those sorts of bold strokes entirely. And in fact, altogether, it's a fairly pharma-friendly plan.
He called it patients first. And in fact, let's play a short clip of Trump speaking with, alongside Alex Azar, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, about his plan that he, is so proud of. Doesn't give too many details, but in his words, of course, it's the greatest thing in the world. Here's President Trump.
My administration is launching the most sweeping action in history to lower the price of prescription drugs for the American people. We've wanted to be doing this. We've been working on it right from day one. It's been a complicated process, but not too complicated. And today it's happening. Our plan will end the dishonest double dealing that allows the middleman to pocket rebates and discounts that should be passed on to consumers and patients. Our plan bans the pharmacist gag rule, which punishes pharmacists for telling patients how to save money. This is a total ripoff, and we are ending it. We are getting tough on the drug makers that exploit our patent laws to choke out competition. Our patent system will reward innovation, but it will not be used as a shield to protect unfair monopolies. We will work every day to ensure all Americans have access to the quality, affordable medication they need and they deserve. And we will not rest until this job of unfair pricing is a total victory for the USA. It will happen, and it's going to happen quickly.
And that is President Trump recently, just a few days ago, unveiling his prescription drug plan that he claims he has been working on since the beginning of his tenure. Now, a lot of the language, Dr. Gaffney, that Trump uses in laying out the problems of facing Americans are similar to what you and others have pointed to, which is that the Americans spend more than any other country per capita on drugs, and that the pharmaceutical industry is clearly overpricing its drugs. But of course, the way in which to control that, your plan differs significantly from President Trump's. Do you summarize that Trump's plan is essentially a market-friendly plan, one that uses the standard sort of market fundamentalist ideology of let competition do its thing, and we should sort of hold back?
You could frame it that way. One thing I think it's important to point out is that regardless of what was in the plan, it is rather notable that pharmaceutical stocks surged
exactly.
After case, which, you know, I think tells you as much as you need to know about it. I mean, you can call it market fundamentalist, but it really in some ways isn't. Insofar as the entire business model of the pharmaceutical industry is to rely on government-protected patent monopolies, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where they get all their money. You know, one of the big provisions of this plan, of Trump's plan, is actually nothing to do with drug prices in America, but to try to raise drug prices in other high-income nations. The argument being that these countries sort of freeload off of our research and development by using their central governments to keep drug prices low. Using trade agreements or whatever to force other nations to raise their drug prices is one big part of their plan. Now, that's something that the pharmaceutical industry would love. It would do nothing for drug companies here at home. The notion that if they increase their profits overseas, they would be content with lower profits at home and just sort of voluntarily, nicely, and quietly reduce prices is a ridiculous fantasy. But that's sort of the important premise. That is actually in that plan.
Now, your plan, which we'll get to in just a moment, aims to reduce drug costs in both the U.S. and Canada. But isn't there a significant difference between prices in Canada and the U.S.? So much so that Vermont recently became the first state to approve the importing of Canadian prescription drugs.
So you're right. This is a plan that was written by both U.S. And Canadian physicians and scholars and advocates. And it is true that U.S. drug prices are substantially higher than Canada, but Canadian health drug prices are substantially higher than those in other high-income nations. So it's better, but not totally better. That being said, there are Canada faces many of the other same problems with drugs as we do. Canada has a universal single-payer healthcare system that works really well for the most part. It's not perfect. But when they devised this, they left out prescription drugs, which back in the day weren't actually a big expenditure. You know, prescription drugs were also left out of Medicare, you know, back in the 1960s, back when, you know, drug prices weren't so crazy and it wasn't such a big expense. So the Canadians actually don't have universal national level coverage of drugs. Coverage differs province by province, and it's not universal. So for that reason, and a number of other reasons, we share a lot of problems with them. But yes, you're right. They do have lower drug prices than we do.
Now, in your proposal that you outline, you talk about how, or you describe, I think, quite well, the way in which the drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry, prices its drugs. You say the industry's pricing strategy is to charge whatever the market will bear, regardless of the actual cost of development. But of course, we're always told by the pharmaceutical companies that in the cost of every pill is the cost of developing that pill, that, you know, we may not understand the amount of money that goes into research and development, but that's not really true, right?
Well, it's not. I mean, you know, there's been studies done showing that, you know, the amount of revenue that's produced by per drug, you know, far exceeds the investment in research and development. Vinay Prasad, a health service researcher, did a really nice study recently making this quite clear. So, The pricing strategy is what you'd expect from a monopoly, right? You price it as high as you can and see what you can get away with. So no, they're not basing these prices on the amount that they spend on research and development, although what they actually spend on research and development per drug is sort of often hazy and unclear because they're not very lucid about that, not very transparent. So we definitely think you could reduce drug prices without reducing research and development. That being said, in our proposal, we outline additional steps we do think that you do need to take as a country to make sure that we are doing research and development right and that we're doing enough research and development.
So it's a seven-step plan, or seven-point plan, I should say. Go through some of these steps that you think need to be taken in order to lower drug prices. I mean, they seem fairly straightforward, and they seem to rely on the government taking charge and saying, we're not going to let drug prices get so out of control. We're going to step in and regulate them.
Right. And, you know, one thing that we make clear in this proposal, which the committee was co-led by Joel Lexgen, who's an expert in pharmaceuticals up in Canada, is that prices are a problem, but they're not the only problem of our pharmaceutical system. You know, even if we reduce drug prices in the United States to what they were paying in, you know, the UK, we'd still have a lot of problems. So what are those problems? Well, first off, prices. Two is access, right? So even if you lower drug prices, people don't have a lot of disposable income. When you're sick, you have even less. Copays and deductibles are quite high. So people are not filling prescriptions or leaving them at the pharmacy or skipping doses, so on and so forth. So you need lower drug prices, which you can accomplish through negotiations at the federal level, in addition to patent reforms and a willingness to break patents when a company is extorting the market. Two is you need universal coverage without copays and deductibles of drugs. In Wales, Northern Ireland, and Scotland, they have universal drug coverage with no copays. And you know what? It hasn't made the country explode. They get by quite well, and it's been financially very successful. So we can do the same thing here. But let's move beyond that to a couple of other issues. You know, what are we getting from all of the R&D that drug companies are spending? All the money they're spending on R&D. Well, in many cases, drug companies are pursuing drugs for their profitability and not for their health impact. And this has resulted in a proliferation of what people call Me Too drugs, one more drug that does the same thing as an existing drug, but it just, you know, is new, and so it can be advertised and can be promoted and can still be a blockbuster. So we need to raise standards for drug approval. In order to get a new drug approved, it should have to be better than existing drugs for the most part, or do something better, at least be more convenient. The FDA is currently in part funded through industry. Since 1993, the FDA has relied on funding from industry. This has been a huge mistake, and we need a fully publicly funded FDA that can be totally...
That's kind of shocking. Hang on. So the Food and Drug Administration, this is a U.S. government agency. You're saying that it gets that this government agency is getting funding from private sources?
Correct. In 1993, a law was passed that basically created a system whereby drug companies would pay user fees to the FDA in exchange for more expeditious reviews of their drugs. And that was sort of justified on the basis of, well, drug companies are getting something out of this and we want quicker reviews, so why don't they just pay for it? But obviously that creates conflicts of interest and that creates a problematic incentive structure. And I'm not, you know, speaking ill of anyone at the FDA, and it's an incredibly important agency, but that incentive structure is problematic and those have gone up over time. So yes, since 1993, the FDA has been partially funded through contributions from industry, and that should end, and it should be a fully publicly funded agency like any other publicly funded agency.
You also have a section in your proposal about advertising and marketing, right? I mean, some countries simply flat out outlaw, ban pharmaceutical companies directly advertising prescription medications to the public, but not here in the U.S.
Yes, there's really only two high-income countries that allow direct-to-consumer advertising.
And
that's
see.
Us and New Zealand. I'm not sure why it's allowed in New Zealand also. I can't explain that. But those
so the rest of the world besides the U.S. and New Zealand bans it?
That's right.
Wow.
And we know that, you know, there's been studies done of advertising that are misleading. And it's also a huge waste of money. You know, every time the industry talks about, well, we need these high drug prices to cover R&D. Well, how about all the money that's going into advertising and promotion? It's not just advertising to patients. It's advertising to doctors. It's detailing of physicians' offices and so on and so forth. And that's tens of billions of dollars a year that's being wasted on that sort of activity. Again, really good drugs don't need to be advertised. You know, if you come up with a cure for pancreatic cancer, you're really not going to need to advertise it. So what we see is misleading advertisements. We see drugs being pushed at very high cost and at a detriment to public health.
I mean, there's also the problem of what happens once a drug is released on the market, right? The post evaluation, is the drug doing what it was supposed to do? Is it having the right success rates? Often here in the United States, we wait till there's a crisis till, you know, people start reporting very severe side effects, or the drugs may not be working or may be causing something that we just didn't expect it to before action is taken. Does the U.S. through the FDA or any other agency, once a drug is released, actually follow the impact of that drug?
So those activities happen, but not enough. So one of the provisions of this proposal is a major reinvestment in post-approval surveillance.
And why would that lower drug prices?
It would not. It would not. Hmm. Not everything in this proposal is about lowering drug prices.
Okay.
We also want to raise drug quality, ensure efficacy, and improve safety. So that's why I said at the beginning, this, you know, the focus is on drug prices because that's what people are feeling at the pharmacy and that's what they're being squeezed by. But we can do a better job of developing drugs and of ensuring the safety and efficacy of drugs as well.
Hmm. So this particular plan to improve the access and quality of drugs, both in the U.S. and Canada, requires the government to actually put people's well-being over corporate profits, right? I mean, unfortunately, most plans that have that as their basis are not as politically viable, but there is a tremendous public support for better and cheaper drugs, right?
Oh, there is. And that's why you've seen the Trump administration have to respond in the way it has. I mean, you know, Trump campaigned on this sort of populist anti-pharma stuff, and it may have helped him get elected for all we know. So there is a huge public demand for change and for reform. And they're responding to that as best they can within the confines of being subservient to corporate America. But people are going to see through that, I think. And this is a huge opening for progressives to move forward and make clear an alternate framework. And that's where we have to get it right. You need to have a plan, idea that you coalesce behind well in advance of coming to power if you actually want to make change. Insofar as this administration has failed to make change, it's because, to some extent, it didn't actually think through things enough ahead of time, which I'm happy about. But that's not some mistake we can make.
And then finally, Dr. Gaffney, doesn't the issue of prescription medication belong within a conversation about healthcare overall? I mean, of course it does. They are related, but we tend to separate them. We tend to look at the delivery of healthcare and as one that involves only doctors and access to hospitals and equipment, and prescription drugs as being slightly separate. Shouldn't we insist that these two belong together, that Medicare, you know, should be something that everyone can access, and that Medicare for all should also be something that can be leveraged to lower drug prices? That would be an ideal scenario.
I would agree 100%. And, you know, one thing we say in the proposal is that some of these reforms could be accomplished piecemeal, but to accomplish the full spectrum, you would need a universal single-payer Medicare for all system. Again, and that's improved Medicare for all. Medicare currently isn't great on, you know, covering all these things necessarily. So, yes, universal drug coverage should be part of a universal healthcare system. That should be delivered without cost sharing. And by using the leverage of a universal public system, you could simultaneously reduce costs. You know, we have a economic analysis that's not in the official paper, but it is available on Physicians for National Health Program's website. That, you know, it's a little bit dry, but it goes through some of the assumptions about what this would cost. And, you know, we do estimate you could easily, through single-payer negotiations, reduce drug prices by 50%. And that's keeping everything else the same. So, yes, it's really, these things are united. A universal healthcare system, universal drug access, and controlling drug prices. Those three aims can be achieved as one integrated whole.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Is PNHP.org the best place to get more information about the plan that we've been discussing?
Absolutely. Go there, and there's a whole website that has the full plan, the text, supplementary information, and explanatory videos, because, you know, to kind of get to the gist of it, if that's what you're looking for.
We'll link to that from our website. Thank you so much, Dr. Adam Gaffney.
Real pleasure to join you. Thank you for having me.
My guest, Dr. Adam Gaffney, is an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School, the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine at the Cambridge Health Alliance. We've been discussing his proposal to lower drug prices and improve drug quality. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.